This is a download of Farming Today from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to www.bbc.co.uk. The presenter today, Anna Hill.
Good morning. New science shows cattle slurry can contain infectious bovine TB organisms. So is it safe to spread slurry on the fields?
If you find the organism in faeces, so in slurry, then it's a potential hazard, because if the organism is alive, then it has the potential to infect other organisms.
We'll have more about that later on. A pioneering scheme to give blind and visually impaired people better access to the great outdoors is being launched in East Yorkshire. The project, which includes guided walks along national trails, is being backed by the TV presenter and explorer Paul Rose. Paul Murphy reports.
The East Yorkshire wolds are familiar territory for the explorer Paul Rose.
This is the Yorkshire wolds. A swathe of rolling...
His popular BBC documentary series is credited with raising the profile of this hidden corner of England.
So these simulate different eye conditions.
But Paul's about to see the wolds in an entirely different way. These special glasses simulate sight loss or visual impairment.
All I've got are just two very tiny circles, completely independent.
Yeah.
The scheme will train volunteers, Paul in this case, on how to lead blind and visually impaired people on a range of outdoor activities.
Social isolation when you've lost your sight is a very common thing. And the ability to go out with a person, having that social contact, that bit of extra confidence building because you're with another person, can mean the difference between someone staying within four walls 7 days a week and someone getting out to stretch their legs.
The My Guide scheme is training volunteers to guide everything from swimming to tours of towns and cities.
I get a lot out of it. It's not just the surrounding sound or the surrounding areas. It's the well-being, it's the confidence, it's the well-being boosted, tremendously boosted well-being that the volunteer gives me when I go to the gym or walks or anything like that.
Sun is just sort of an essential piece of orientation for me.
This is just fantastic. The My Guide service enables somebody to have independence to actually come out here with their guide. It could be a friend, it could be somebody, a volunteer, just to enjoy the countryside. It is absolutely priceless.
And so the call for volunteer guides is now going out, all because something as simple as a walk in the hills can be a truly profound experience for those who haven't had the chance to do it.
Paul Murphy reporting. The government's published two new bills which pave the way for domestic legislation which will be needed after the UK leaves the EU. But the bills will not be debated in Parliament immediately. The government claims the trade bill and the customs bill set the groundwork to becoming an independent global trading nation, providing necessary certainty for businesses and international trading partners to make the most of this opportunity. But how much do these bills actually say? I asked Chris Southworth, Secretary General of the International Trade of Commerce, if either bill reveals any detail on post-Brexit trade deals.
There doesn't seem to be much detail at all. As far as I can see, it's just the business as usual. The government's setting out its stall to prepare the ground to leave the EU, but I can't see any change. All the information that's out now is already out in the public realm, so it would be nice to see more detail for companies to work on.
How long do you think it's going to take then before there is some meat on these bare bones that we've got today?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think businesses are eager for more detail now. I think they need it now. Decisions, we're getting to a point of no return for some industries. There comes a cut-off point where they have to make fiduciary decisions to carve up the businesses and either ship jobs and roles onto the continent. So we're getting to that point where companies are just have to make decisions and therefore need the information. And if the information isn't there, they're going to have to make the decisions either way.
Looking at international trade again, then we have been told, you know, over the last couple of weeks, oh, well, UK can come out of the EU and trade on WTO rules alone. Is that right?
Well, it can, but there's only one country that does do that, and that's Mauritania. Everybody else trades on trade agreements with their neighbouring countries. So it's true to say that you can come out, but I think nobody would agree that that's a good idea for the UK to do that. most countries have a sort of an ecosystem of trade agreements with their neighbouring countries and further afield, either in a bilateral capacity or a multilateral capacity through the World Trade Organization.
And just one final question. When you saw the outline of these, the trade bill, the customs bill, were you disappointed that there isn't more information there?
Yeah, I think there's frustration. There's lots of uncertainty in the market. Companies need information, both companies here, but also the companies and countries we're trading with. Don't forget, they have even less information than we do sitting in the UK. So, you know, the time is coming. We need to know exactly what sits underneath these ideas. I don't think anybody would disagree with the sort of concept of global Britain and going out and trading with the world. I don't think actually there's anything particularly new about that. The UK has always done that. It's the question is how, and on a very, very practical level, what are the agreements, what's the trading regime on the customs level, what does that mean on standards, what does that mean on regulations, etc., etc.
Chris Southworth there from the International Chamber of Commerce. This week we're looking into climate change and agriculture and how the one is influencing the other. One potential threat to farmers from global warming is the growing number of pests and diseases, both from an explosion in those already in the UK and from new arrivals overseas. Our reporter Howard Shannon has been to meet one farmer who says he's already seeing a change.
Well, I've come to Surrey and I'm with arable farmer Peter Knight. Peter, looking around your farm here, is there any evidence of climate change affecting your farm?
Yes, there's definitely a change in the weather pattern. We're inundated with aphids on cereals at the moment, and I'm fairly certain that's due to the mild autumn that we've had. The situation we're in as arable farmers is it's very difficult to control a disease once it's in the crop. So we're trying to eliminate the disease or prevent the disease from coming in the first place. We, generally speaking, have to choose the chemical we're using or adjust the rate based on what we think the weather's going to do for the next 3 weeks. As it becomes more difficult to predict that weather, I mean, the Met Office struggled to predict the next 3 days, never mind the next 3 weeks, it makes our job much more difficult.
Looking back to the beginning of your farming year, do you recall seeing pests and diseases appearing earlier in the year?
Now we're having to routinely treat crops in March to keep the level of disease down in the crops, and that mainly due to increase in temperature and the fact that these diseases are not getting killed off by cold winters.
Dr. Eleanor Webster works for the Royal Horticultural Society and is the author of a report looking into the potential implications of climate change. So what are her conclusions?
Well, the main thing really is that climate change is going to disrupt the host and pest and or disease interaction. And what I mean by that is that pests and disease, their distribution depends on the climate, the environmental conditions, but also how healthy the actual plant is that they're trying to attack. And climate change is likely to affect all of these things.
Is it a slow process for farmers to keep an eye on, or is it a relatively fast process?
It's a relatively slow process. There are things that will happen quickly and certain species will develop quickly, but there should be time for farmers to be able to adapt gradually their production processes.
Are there any plus points to climate change? I mean, perhaps the increase in ladybirds, perhaps, who are beneficial predators?
Yeah, there absolutely will be. So the warmer climate will mean an increased life cycle for some species. So these beneficial insects, like you say, ladybirds and others, they're likely to be able to be active for longer, which is great because that will coincide with the longer growing season, which is definitely an advantage.
Meanwhile, back in Surrey, and Peter Knight has half an eye on potential invaders.
There's no doubt that we are getting warmer. We're not getting the cold winters to knock down the background population. So we do stand a chance of importing diseases and pests from further down in southern Europe, even possibly as far down as Africa. They're going to eventually make their way to the UK and add challenges to what we're already doing.
Arable farmer Peter Knight, and before that, Dr. Eleanor Webster from the Royal Horticultural Society. Now, yesterday, you'll remember, we heard about new scientific work being carried out on a dairy farm which showed bovine tuberculosis organisms were present in cattle slurry, even from cows which were marginally clear in the current skin test for bovine TB. Well, that interview prompted this question from listener Jan Hallmark.
Whilst listening this morning to all the new ways you described to better identify TB in both cattle and badgers, I was struck by the thought that if the major infection was found in faeces, the spreading of slurry on fields could be a major cause of infection of the badger population, thus adding to the problem. There was no mention of treatment of slurry, or did I miss that?
Well, that set us wondering too, so we called Professor Liz Wellington of Warwick University, who's been working specifically on testing cattle slurry for infectious bovine TB organisms. She is currently in India, and she told me that cattle could still be shedding BTB organisms even when they were tested as possibly clear of bovine TB.
We think that's one of the key ways that infection is being perpetuated, because these cattle go back into the herd because the animals swallow the pus that comes from the lungs, the infection.
And then it comes out in the faecal matter.
Exactly, in the faeces.
If there are TB organisms in cattle slurry, is there a problem then for farmers spreading slurry on land?
Yes, I think it could be a problem, because although we don't know exactly how the disease transmits from faeces to cattle, if you find the organism in faeces, so in slurry, then it's a potential hazard, because if the organism is alive, then it has the potential to infect other organisms. So, for example, if the slurry is spread in a pasture and then the cattle come on the pasture, there's a pretty good chance of infection.
Do we know how long that organism might remain infectious in the environment?
It's difficult to determine that, but we did some studies and it looked as though it could survive at least a year.
Would you also find then that the infection, if it was in the slurry, might get back into the badger population if the badgers are on the land that the slurry has been spread on?
Yeah, I think that's a major risk. And the slurry sort of encourages earthworm growth, and badgers really love earthworms. So you can see a sort of connectivity between slurry management and badgers.
So spreading slurry could be a problem. So as a scientist then, what would you say, if you're taking a precautionary principle about the spread of bovine TB, what would your advice be about spreading slurry?
I think one would have to look at ways of reducing the risk. So treating the slurry and monitoring the pathogen in the slurry. Maybe it needs to go through anaerobic digestion or some other means to reduce the infection potential. That's absolutely essential for farmers.
Do we know whether AD would kill off the infectivity or not?
We don't know, and this is work that needs to be done. We need to look at ways of destroying infection, and I think that's a hugely important area for farmers.
Professor Liz Wellington from Warwick University speaking to me from India. And that's all from us today. I'm Anna Hill. Producer in Bristol is Beatrice Fenton.